Ben Helfgott, Reel 1. Ben, can you tell me something about your background, your family background and your early education in Poland before the war?
Well, I came from a town with a population of about 55,000. Out of that, 13,000 people were Jewish. My town was a semi-industrial town, surrounded with a lot of agriculture around it. We were 42 kilometers away from the second biggest town in Poland, which was known as the Manchester of Poland, called Lutsch. My father was a partner in a flour mill, and there were three of us. I was the oldest, and I had two younger sisters. When the war broke out, I was nearly 10 years old, and my youngest sister was 9, and the youngest was 5.
What was the name of your town?
The name of the town was Piotrków Trybunalski.
Did your mother work?
No, my mother was fully occupied looking after us. Ours was a very happy home, a very loving home. My father used to come back for lunch every day from work, and then he used to return to business. And we observed the high holidays and the Sabbath, and it was always very warm and friendly. Lots of people used to come and visit our home. We had many friends, and we lived very harmoniously with them. And altogether, we had quite a few other members of our family living in the same town, because originally my family did not live in that town. They came to live there about the time when I was about a year old. But previous to that, my mother was born about 80 or 90 miles away from Piotrków, and my father somewhere about 120 miles away from there. So really they were not natives of that town. But I consider myself a native, because I was only about nearly a year when we moved there.
Can you tell me something about your early education?
Well, it was a normal education of a child. When the war started, I just finished 4 elementary classes, and I was going to start in the 5th form. I used to go to school from 8 o'clock till 1 o'clock, which was a secular school, where I learned Polish and all the other subjects. And in the afternoon, I used to attend a Jewish school, where I used to learn Hebrew and Jewish studies. And I used to do this from about 3 o'clock till 5 o'clock.
As a young boy, were you aware of any anti-Semitism?
Yes, I was very much aware of anti-Semitism, because it was all around me, especially in the last 2-3 years. It was, of course, the time of the beginning of my awareness, really, because I was it was between the age of 7 and 9, and I had a very early political awareness because of the situation that which we lived. First of all, it was during the time of the Depression, the time of unemployment. There were a lot of poverty around, and it was visible. It was people used to, poor people used to come and knock at the doors begging. There was the mendicity was all around. It was just something that I'll never forget, the kind of poverty that existed. Children used to walk around barefoot. Their trousers were always torn, and children were always begging for food. And at the same time, it was also a time where next door to Poland, the neighbor Germany, Hitler came to power, and Hitler was attacking the Jews, and that was spilling over to Poland. So first of all, at home, my parents and friends always discussing the situation that is that was happening in Germany vis-a-vis the Jews. Then, of course, in Poland, the right-wing party became also very predominant, and anti-Semitism, which always did exist in Poland, but it spilled over more so now to Poland, and the Poles were emboldened by the fact that Hitler was so outspoken against the Jews. So Poles used to attack Jews. They used to stop people from buying in Jewish shops. There were slogans, graffiti everywhere. Don't buy in a Jewish shop. Jews, get out. Go to Palestine, and so on. Then there were the question of Polish boys attacking Jewish boys, or Polish men attacking Jewish men. It usually used to happen when Polish boys used to have their lessons in catechism, and then where they were told about how the Jews killed Jesus Christ. They felt that they had to do something, and they came out into the town and they attacked Jewish boys without. Without any warning, and they usually attacked them, especially when there were a large number of Polish boys attacking a small number of Jewish boys. So it got to the stage where it was really very dangerous for children to walk by themselves in town, because you've got to understand that before the war, first of all, in Poland, there were not many cars about. In my hometown, there were very, very few cars. I mean, most of the conveyancing was taking place by really a horse and carts. If one was moving from place to place, like, one used a horse and cart. My father, for instance, to go to business, he used a horse and carriage. So it was easier for children to move around in the streets and to play in the streets, in the courtyards, and so on. Unlike now, parents are very mindful of the fact that it's very dangerous for children to play in the streets. And I sometimes, this is one aspect of life which I really find was the one that was most enjoyable, and I find that children today miss it. However, to come back to the question of anti-Semitism. So whilst officially the Polish government did not necessarily attack the Jews, because the Polish government was in a very difficult economic situation and needed help from the Western world, and so therefore they simply could not afford to attack Jews, because in any case it went against human rights. But unofficially, it was very much condoned by the government, and it was rampant, I would say, and Jews were attacked more and more as we went on towards the start of the war.
What was the reaction in your household, from yourself or your parents, to the events in Germany later on towards 38, Kristallnacht?
Well, it was one of anxiety and uncertainty of not knowing what was going to happen, because there was talk about war, the Poles felt very strong, and there was a great resurgence of nationalism in Poland. In fact, in 1938. When the Germans were marching into Czechoslovakia, or were demanding Sudetenland, the Poles too joined in with the Germans and with the Hungarians and claimed certain parts of Czechoslovakia. And this was a part which was only a very small part, which was over near, it was just part of a called Chechen,
and the river was all that. They wanted the other side of the town and a little part around it. And the Poles gave an ultimatum to the Czechs demanding that part of Czechoslovakia. Well, the Czechs, of course, were betrayed. They're told that they have to sacrifice themselves for the sake of peace, and so they gave up, first of all, the Sudetenland. Then, of course, the Germans marched in and took Moravia and Slovakia, and the Poles and the Hungarians took the other parts. And at that time, the Poles were mobilizing, and they sort of gave the impression as if they've become a great power. And with the threat of Germany around, they also gave the impression that they will be able to defend themselves. But nevertheless, what was going on in Germany affected us, because German Jews of Polish origin were being sent back to Poland, and they were telling us about the atrocities in Germany and what's been happening there. And this, of course, happened also that quite a number of Jewish people who lived in my hometown a long time ago and then moved to Germany, they were sent back to their hometown, and people were gathering to meet them when they came. And they were telling us stories that really made us very frightened. And we thought, well, if the Germans were to come to Poland, that if such a fate were to befall upon us, we would really be in straitened circumstances.
Can you tell me now about the day when war broke out?
Well, I remember this day very vividly, because it was the end of the holidays. I happened to be staying at the time with my mother's family and with my grandfather. And my mother came to join me for about 3 weeks. And we decided to leave on the 1st of September. It was a Friday. She decided to leave very early in the morning because she wanted to come home earlier so that she can prepare for the Sabbath. Normally, the journey used to take about 2.5 hours. That morning, when we went on the bus, at about 7:30, we traveled for about a quarter of an hour, and then there was an alarm, so we had to get off the bus and jump into the ditch and wait until the alarm was over. And this seemed to repeat itself all the time, so much so that it took us a whole day before we got home. Of course, in the meantime, my father was expecting us at the bus station somewhere around 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning. And when we didn't arrive, he kept phoning my grandfather to find out what happened. My grandfather informed him that we left early, because he had no way of finding out what was happening, other than what he could hear, that the Germans are attacking Poland, because there was no real declaration of war against the Poles. The Germans simply went in on the pretext that a day before Poles attacked the Germans, and therefore they went back and they retaliated. And of course there were rumors that the Germans are not far away already. Within one day there were all these rumors flying. And when we arrived in the evening, there was no time for any supper or for anything. We just ate whatever there was, and we went to sleep. We got up very early in the morning and we went down to the basement. In fact, the whole town was deserted, because people were either lying in the basements or out in the fields. But then suddenly, at around midday, suddenly there was an alarm, and within minutes the town was being bombed. The center of the town was bombed. It was our first experience, really, of bombing, and the whole house, it was a very strong building where we lived. One could feel that the building was going to fall any minute. Fortunately, it didn't hit us. But what did happen, one of the neighbors who lived in that building happened to be in the street, and a shrapnel hit his leg. And so he came down, and I could see there was a trail of blood behind him. So that was my first taste of war. Now, once the bombing stopped, people were so frightened that they then decided to get out of town. And within a very short time, there was a panic, and everybody was moving in the direction, northeast direction. Well, my parents decided that they will go as well, and my father went to get the horse and carriage. We loaded up with whatever we could, with bedding and clothing and some food, and off we went. By that time it was evening, but there were so many people on the road that we really were walking at a snail's pace. But this is exactly what we did. Also, we were on the carriage, this took us a whole night, and we negotiated something like about 15 kilometers. This is how fast we were going. And in the morning, we arrived in a place which, before the war, had a population of 5,000 people. It was a sort of town cum village, most of the buildings were made out of wood and thatched roofs. And of course the animals were nearby, the stables were nearby. It was all sort of very much of a village life there. Now when we got there, we found that the atmosphere in this place was one of serenity and peace, and people were walking around, talking. They looked very happy. Now, when we got to this place, my father heard that my uncle, the younger brother, with his wife and his child, were there, and so we went to this place where they were, and we joined them there. And we decided, for the time being, to hang on, because we thought, well, it's no point running, because it seemed all so nice. And especially, it was a very beautiful day. It was a summer's day. It was the 3rd of September, the day when Britain declared war on Germany. And we heard about it, and we were overjoyed about the news that Britain and France have declared war, and of course we thought right now that Britain and France have declared war, the war won't take long, and it'll all finish very soon, and we all were in a very, very happy mood that morning. Towards the afternoon, I was playing with other children in the street. Suddenly, there was some movement, some planes were going, and my mother sort of came running out and got hold of me and says, "Come." And as she did this, suddenly bombs started falling. When we got into the building, this happened to be one of the very few buildings which was a one-story building. There were not big buildings there. There was no bigger building than a one-story building. And this one was made of brick. Bricks. We got in, and people who happened to be outside in the street also came in. So the result was that we were all squashed in that building, especially downstairs, and there was no way that one could open the door anymore. In the meantime, as the bombs started falling, and incidentally they were all incendiary bombs, the place was within minutes was in a conflagration, and we could hear people's voices and noises mixed with animal voices, And we could see from outside, we could see sort of looking down, people running, burning. And it was a scene that probably out of Dante's Inferno. It was just something that it's impossible really to describe what went on then. This went on, I don't know really for how long it went on, but it seemed like it was eternity. And the bombing stopped, and somehow they managed to open the door, and we all got out of the house and started running towards the woods, because the woods, the house, the building, the town was surrounded by woods. But as we were running, I could see people falling all around me, because the planes were coming low down and they were just taking people off. They were shooting at them. The people were just falling. So we got into the woods. By some miracle, all five of us happened to be together. We've lost our my uncle and his wife and his baby. We didn't know what happened to them, because we were all just running. We didn't know where we were running, but somehow we were together, and we got into the woods, and we kept running as far as we could. Then we stopped. And whilst we were in the woods, the noises simply did not stop, and the echo kept on reverberating all the time, because people were calling out names, because they were separated as they were running, and many, many families, whole families were lost there. Some families, there were some survivors, but it was, again, there were unspeakable scenes of people sobbing, people lying, trying to attend to people who were wounded. But in the main, it was really a situation where everything was in confusion, and everybody went really, it was everyone for himself, so to speak. If one could help, one did it, but at the same time, one was concerned about looking for one's own family. We stayed there until the evening. Of course, at that stage, everything around us was burning. And when we came out of the woods, it was like daylight, because it was all illuminated with the smoke, with the flames. So we went to the building where we stayed, and that building was not hit, but it was shattered, simply because it wasn't strong enough to withstand all the bombs that were hit around them. So we managed to get out some of our belongings, a couple of cases. Of course, the horse was killed. The carriage was broken. So we took some cases and we went into the went back to the woods. And in the early morning, we walked for a while until we got to another village. My father then negotiated with some farmer there, and asked him to take us a bit further. And so he took us for about 15-20 kilometers, and then we stopped. And we used to travel during the night, and we used to stay in the woods during the day. This went on for just a few days, until one day in the morning, when we came out from the woods in the morning, we looked around and we saw the German army. We then thought, well, there's no point going any further. We decided to go back, because we were much further away than our hometown. So my father hired somebody to take us back, and we went back via the same place. And there were still hundreds of bodies lying around, and they were all charred bodies, and the smell of that place has never left me. And I would like to relate a story here that happened to me 20 years later in Fell. It was not 20, it was 24 years later, because it happened in 1963. I was in Poland. I attended the 20th anniversary of the uprising of the Warsaw Ghetto. And I went by coach with a group from England. It so happened we happened to be passing that place, and just before we got there, I thought I would like to relate this story to the people on the coach. And as we were passing this place, I could subconsciously or psychologically the smell of the time that when we passed back going back to my hometown came back to me as if it has never left me. And from time to time, I get that same sensation whenever I see some kind of scene, certain scenes. I sort of get this sensation and the scene of these charred bodies and destroyed buildings and so on. Anyway, we got back to our hometown, and then we heard the story of war, what's been happening. As soon as the Germans entered my town, which was on the 5th of September 1939, on a Tuesday, one of the first actions was to take out some Jews and put them against the wall and shoot them. They took out amongst the people whom they shot was quite a well-known rabbi with his family, who I don't know what made them take out this particular rabbi, but there was never any reason why the Germans did anything. It was just on the spur of the moment. It was a whim, a caprice. And in this case, it was nothing more, nothing else. They just happened to hear that or just happened to see this man, the man with a beard, and they got hold of him, and that's how it started. And also, within a very short time, they meted out what they call a contribution on the Jewish community. They demanded a certain amount of money within a very short time, because if that demand was not met, they declared that they would take out first 100 Jews, and amongst them the elders of the Jew of the community, and they would shoot them. Well, of course, the money was found and paid, and but that was only the beginning, because from that moment on, there were constant demands on all kinds of things. Now, among other things that they used to do, they used to pick people out in the streets at random and send them away for 2 or 3 days to do some menial work. Didn't matter what, as long as they did work. If it was a matter of just taking stones from one place, sending it to another place, that's what they used to do. But it was really the beginning of the terrorizing and demoralizing the people. It also so happens